Strange happened. The machine started to breathe, and then a bit later they suddenly spoke in a strange language that they couldn't really understand. The brothers didn't know how to react. They tried to ignore the machines and keep it a hidden secret. The machines seemed to be nice, but who knows? Somehow they had the feeling that there was an unbelievably powerful force hiding beneath the friendly surface. Soon the machines started to whisper in their ears, "You have to do it. You have to do it." They didn't have any choice. After a while, people started to hear strange sounds and soon saw unseen things over their cities in the evening sky. First in northern parts of Europe and then also over Asian, American and African cities.
And what's up, Evolver Planet? That was a little DJ Scalar from one of his new mixes. We're going to be playing that throughout the show tonight. And you are listening to Evolver Planet Radio, and I'm your host, Jonah Bolt. And with us, as always, is Aaron Shaw.
Hey, thanks for tuning in. Today's Friday, February 3rd, 2012.
And we have some awesome people on the show tonight. We have a sport update coming in from Indianapolis with Maria Rayner joining us on the show.
We'll also have an interview with Maja Dau, White Witch of LA.
And we also have joining us on the show is Chris Hoover, who is an author and visionary who has a new book out, imagine-freedom.com. And with that, we'll first go into a couple of Evolver updates. I'll just give a shout out to the Asheville Evolver group first. We had an amazing Evolver group last weekend where we had two guest speakers. Dr. Theodore Somadir was one of them, and we had a really, really good group. There was not so many people, about 12 people, but it talked about a lot of good information. So just a shout out to the Asheville Evolver Spore group and all the Ashevillians out there listening. So shout out to that. Aaron, you got any updates for us?
Yeah, well, we're still gearing up here in LA for Jonathan Phillips' tour. His tour is underway for Electric Jesus. I think I mentioned that pretty much every show. And then also, there's some good reading on Reality Sandwich. There was an essay today posted about the whole Burning Man ticket debacle, which affects some people, I suppose. But Burning Man has never really been, you know, cheap. But and then there's also a really, I found this a really interesting post called 2012 Between Critical and Visionary Thinking. It's about this author Joseph Gelfer's new book that kind of tries to strike a balance between the more visionary interpretations of the 2012 phenomenon and the more critical sort of cultural underpinnings that make people interested in the eschaton to begin with. So there's some good reads, as always, on Reality Sandwich, and you can find out about regional sports on evolver.net too.
That's what's up. Awesome. And with that, let's jump into our first guest who's joining us on the air from Colorado, and it's Chris Hoover, who just has his new book out, Imagine Freedom. You can check out imagine-freedom.com. And I met Chris about a year ago, and he is an awesome, true, enlightened being. And he first told me about his vision and his book that he wanted to write. And I was like, go ahead and write it. And he did. And it's amazing to see someone's dream manifest. And it took him over 10 years to write this book. And without any further ado, Chris, thanks for coming on the show.
Jonah, it's a pleasure to be here. It's been a long time coming, like you said. To be quite honest, I started that manuscript in the wake of 9/11, and just was really obsessed with what really happened on 9/11, and dug in deep for 3, 4, 5 years. That's all that was on my mind was 9/11 and what really happened. And throughout the past decade, I put that manuscript down many times. And about 2 years ago, I lived in Costa Rica, actually, for about a year. And didn't know it at the time, but I actually got re-inspired while I was down in Costa Rica to finish writing it. And got back here in the States and put my head to the grindstone. And 2012 was my deadline. And literally New Year's Eve, I was at my parents' house working till 1 a.m. in the morning and got the final manuscript up and on Amazon about 1 a.m. New Year's Eve. So that's a testament to the 2012 prophecy spin that's on the latter part of the story.
Wow, that's amazing. I remember when we first started talking, I met you through a mutual friend, and you told me about this vision and this journey you had, and it was amazing. And a lot of the stuff you talk about and mention in the book are realistic things and things that have happened, and we've talked about this a lot, and we've talked a lot. And tell us about the book, where the vision came from, what's in the book, and how is it, and why is it so important right now this year?
Well, it's a really interesting story because in many ways, the book mirrors my real life, and it goes back actually 20 years. I had this really lucid dream, and I'll tell you the dream. It's about a minute-long story. It's very, very abstract before I get into it, but it started, I was swimming with, of all things, my friends from high school. We were in about an 80-foot round cylindrical tube underneath the ocean, and it was very euphoric. It wasn't scary. It was very bright, very shiny, very happy. And we were being propelled by this underwater force and happy tropical fish swimming beside us and bubbles. And bottom line, we came up out of the ocean into this cove, and I immediately took on the position of tour guide. And it was this tropical setting, palm trees, so on and so forth. We started hiking up this mountain. And we got to the top of this mountain, and I looked off in the distance in this mist in the early morning sun, and I saw these shapes, and I knew something about them was sinister, and I put my finger up to my mouth to my classmates to be quiet, and of course, kids will be kids, and they all went, "Ooh, look over there," and sure enough, they were these gorillas, and they were a good half a mile or a mile off in the distance, but when they looked at us, the sun was shining on their face, and they had these kind of glowing iridescent space eyes. Again, this is all a dream. And they started chasing us through the jungle and running for about a mile. We get up to the top of this cliff, and there's this abandoned gondola, this open-sided mining basket on top of this cable. Grabbed my girlfriend's hand, we jumped off the side of the cliff into this basket and started free-falling down over the top of the jungle. And we're zipping for about a mile on this cable, and finally we smash into this tree, and we tumble down to the bottom of the canopy, and lo and behold, right there in the bottom of the forest canopy is this like 1960s, 50s style train car, silver with a big red, white, and blue flag on it, and these big macho Marines in camouflage carrying M16s. And we ran past them, me and my girlfriend, and ran into this train car and went up to the Marine captain, and I yelled at him. I said, "The space monkeys are coming. The space monkeys are coming." And bottom line, of course, he looked at us and he said, "You stupid kids, there are no space monkeys." And bang, 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 a minute later, these monkeys land on the roof. And of course, we look outside and all you see is these crazy iridescent eyes looking in through the windows. And the Marine captain stares at me and with fear in his eyes, and boom, that was the end of the dream. Okay. So that was a mouthful. That was 20 some odd years ago. And in real life, I have been going, while I was called to go to Costa Rica for whatever reason, about 6 months after 9/11 went down. And I hadn't started writing yet. I was just figuring things out in my life. I knew there were strange things going on in the world. And came out of Costa Rica with, I think, what I would call a clearer mind and just a more relaxed vision of what could be, because it was so raw and so, in certain ways, uncorrupted down there. And about 6 months after that, I got inspired to start writing the book. And then when I started writing the book, I started noticing real-life instances from visiting Costa Rica to the dream. And then the dream takes on this, or the story takes on this conspiracy theory about 9/11. And, you know, of course, the the main character who starts blowing the whistle by 9/11 on 9/11 is Chase, and well, he has his house bugged by the FBI and the CIA, and it goes on and on and on and on to where the leaders of Imagine Freedom, which is the underground movement, they actually have to go into exile in Costa Rica. And this is when it begins to kind of tie into the dream. Are you following all of this, Jonah?
Yeah, I've heard it, so keep going.
Okay, all right, just wanted to make sure. So once the leaders of the underground get into Costa Rica, one of the underground, we'll call them Navy SEALs on the good guy's side, his grandfather is an ancient Costa Rican shaman. And so Reed is the main character of the underground, and he's talking to Nanoya, who Nanoya is kind of this Rambo Navy SEAL guy, and he's telling him about how he found this place, this cove, from his dream that he had over 10 years ago. And Nanoya said, "That's crazy." He said, "And actually, my grandfather should hear this because he's a shaman." So next thing you know, they have this kind of Indian ritual with tiki torches and a moon on the beach and a campfire. And this grandfather shaman, this feeble old 80-year-old tanned weatherman and indigenous Indian attire, comes walking up the beach. And he says, "I'm here to hear your story." And of course, Reed goes on to tell the whole story that I just told. And Nanoya's grandfather is looking up in the distance, up on the mountain. And after Reed gets done telling his story, he says to Reed, he says, "Son, indeed, your dream is more than just a dream. It's a vision. And in my land and in my family, we call it medicine." And he said, "Your medicine is very deep." And he said, "I'm here to help you figure it out." He said, "Now I'm going to ask you some very deep questions, and I want you to concentrate and take your time to answer them." And so he says, "In real life, have you ever noticed any synergies, any interaction between your dream and what is here right now?" And Reed goes on to explain how the first time he went to visit Costa Rica, he was on a zip line, and how it took him almost 2 years till he came back from Costa Rica to where he actually realized the cart that I explained in my dream, like zipping over the jungle canopy, was like being on a zip line in Costa Rica. And then the next thing Reed explained was the next time he was down in Costa Rica, which in real life was me, he was sitting on top of this mountain overlooking this cove, drinking a cup of coffee, reading a book about shamanism at dawn one morning, and realized that the cove that was right below him was actually the cove from where his dream all started, in that underwater tube, the underwater portal, whatever you want to call it. And so Nanoya's grandfather is saying, "Son, you're on the right path." He said, "Did you notice anything else?" And he says, "Well, really, what else is there?" He's like, "You know, I told a lot of it right there. Is two big synergies." And he goes, "Well," he goes, "there's two main things." He goes, "The space monkeys, whatever you want to call them, the gorillas with the crazy eyes," he said, "they're very pertinent and very relevant to your story." And he goes, "And then that portal that was underneath the ocean is also very relevant to your story." So he said, "What I need to do," this is the grandfather speaking, he said, "I need to go home and I need to meditate on this for a few days. And then what we'll do is we will meet up in my good friend's cave up behind the waterfall." And Reed's eyes just kind of look over at his girlfriend. And again, this is in the book, because they have a friend who owns this cave that's behind this waterfall that's on the mountain. And he stops the grandfather right there and he says, "Abuelo," which is grandfather in Spanish. He said, "You're talking about John Chapman's cave?" And he said, "Yeah, of course." He said, "John and I are brothers." And he said, "I know you know John." And he goes, "Nothing in this life is a coincidence. That's why we're all here. In fact," he said, "your dream is so powerful. That is exactly why we are all here right now on this beach at this very moment." And I believe in real life that that's just how life is. Things work out. If you're in tune spiritually, that you're in the flow and you meet the people you're supposed to meet, law of attraction, whatever you want to call it, that's how it happens. So the story goes on, and they meet back in the cave 3 or 4 days later. And I'm not going to give away the whole punchline of the story. People will have to read that, and hopefully they will. But what happens is when they meet back in the cave, it's a full moon, and they're in this amazingly beautiful cave behind the waterfalls, which, by the way, there's a video of that actual cave on the website. And they have this ritual again, and Nanoya's grandfather goes on to explain – he says, look, he said, indeed, your medicine is very deep. And he goes, this is how deep it is. He said, 500 some years ago, there's an ancient Indian legend that explains that there were these bright, bright, bright lights zipping all over Costa Rica. And in fact, the next morning when the people woke up, there was all these hieroglyphic geometrical shapes all over the fields. But the last point that they saw this bright light, the spaceship, whatever you want to call it, it crash landed in the valley below this cave, below this mountain. And it's been an ancient Indian legend that the next day the local tribe set out up to 100 warriors, and they looked for weeks and weeks and weeks for any materialistic remains or any human or any alien remains for that matter, and they never could find anything. So the ancient Indian prophecy goes that there's actually a portal to another world somewhere below the cave, below the valley. And ironically, in real life, the valley where my friend John's cave is called Las Tumbas, which means the cave, wow, the tombs. So, so you can tell it's very deep. And I really, honestly, Jonah, I didn't get the last part of that story about meeting the shaman or the cave or even the portal to the other world tie in with my dream until I spent the last year down there 2 years ago. So you're following all that, right?
Yeah, yeah. I've heard the story. It's amazing that the vision you had 20 years ago, and you found the cave. I've seen videos of it, and all this stuff has come to fruition. It's a master manifestation of an amazing vision you had. It's a great story, and now you have the book where other people can read about it. So it's amazing.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate your interest and your support on that, because it is a very deep story. I won't lie. I mean, it's very personal. It's very exposing in certain ways. But by the same token, I think most people will say it's very entertaining. And in fact, my father, who hadn't read a book in about 15 years, he said he's read it. He's one of the first people to read. And I asked him what he thought, honestly. And he said, well, you know, if nothing else, Chris, he said, I read your book, which, by the way, it's about 400 pages. He said, I could barely put it down, and I only put it down twice, and I finished it cover to cover in 6 or 8 hours. So, that's my father. Of course, he's probably going to have good things to say about it, but nevertheless inspiring to hear the first person that read it say that, who hadn't read a book in about 15 years.
Wow. So your website is imagine-freedom.com. You can check out more about the story and Chris's book. And with that, Chris, thanks so much for coming on the air.
Well, thank you, Jonah. And
awesome.
I appreciate it.
Cool. And with that, we're going to listen to a little bit more of DJ Scalar's music track, his new mix. And we're going to get a Spore City update when we get back. So sit back, relax, and enjoy some more Scalar.
Welcome back to Evolver Planet Radio. We're about to hear a Spore update from a new Spore City, new to the Evolver Network, Indianapolis, Indiana. Here to talk about her new Spore City is Maria Renner. Welcome, Maria.
Thanks, Erin. Greetings.
So tell us, how did you find the Evolver Network?
Well, I found Evolver just from friends of friends. and was just really intrigued by the concept and idea. And actually, after living a couple years abroad in Guatemala, Bali, I just realized that there was something special about those places and those countries. And when I returned back home to my hometown of Indianapolis, what I realized is like, you can be happy anywhere as long as you have a community. And it was kind of lacking in Indianapolis. And I just felt really empowered after going to the last Burning Man to, you know, create the community if you don't have it, instead of waiting for something to change, instead of waiting just to create it yourself. So that's kind of how it began here in Indianapolis.
Oh, so you had friends of friends who went to Evolver events or who also ran Spores?
That pretty much knew Reality Sandwich and the Evolver Network, that didn't necessarily like run a Spore, but were familiar with it and just, I guess, posted articles and shared it that way.
So how have your events gone so far? How long have you been doing events?
Our event started in November. That's when our group began. So we began with a theme of Occupy the Future, and that had about 18 people. But since then, I feel like our group's pretty much exploded. Our Unified Field Theory Spore had over 30 people, and we just had a special Evolver event that was a raw food workshop, a cooking demo and film screen that had over 70 people. So it seems like our group's really growing rapidly. And since Evolver's volunteer run, one of the things I think has been key for our group is trying to come up with really creative ways to promote for free. So we've been using tons of social networking and partnering with other groups that are interested in some of the same topics. It's been fun trying to find creative free ways to grow our group and to promote. So it seems like we've been pretty successful so far.
Yeah, that is such rapid growth. I mean, there must have been, you know, a space to fill with your Spore in Indianapolis. So how do you organize? Like, do you have a consistent team so far, or do you have different collaborators?
Yeah, we have a team of three of us that organize the events, and we're trying to bring in more collaborators. And so we have a fourth now, but I think that there's better results and it's easier to organize if we have more people, so it doesn't put the focus or burden just on one person. And we've also found that the more people that you involve, the easier it is to get ideas and come up with creative ideas and also to promote.
Right. So what kind of groups do you reach out to in sort of your promotional strategy and in your collaboration?
It seems like there's a really large market or need here for alternative health topics. So one of the ways that we've done some promotion is partnering with some meetup.com raw food groups or alternative health groups. And so there's been a lot of people that have come from that. So kind of promoting our events on some similar topic groups. And I think meetup.com is a really great resource for Spore organizers or in general of finding like-minded people. So that's something that we've used. And also we create flyers. One of our organizers, her name is Margie. She is awesome at creating really interesting, colorful flyers. And so we post those around town in places that would, you know, have the market for people that would be interested in Evolver as well.
Very cool. And so what would you like to see the Evolver Spore become over the year? Like how would you like to expand?
Well, the next thing that we're planning on that's coming up is our Evolver film series. At the end of February and the beginning of March, we're screening four films. We're screening 2012, Time for Change, My Reincarnation, I Am, and a film called Wake Up. And we have a really great space where we hold our event. It's called the Earth House Collective. And it's an old 150-year-old church building that's been repurposed and houses a fair trade cafe, and it has a huge sanctuary space. And they allow us to use the space for free. So we're planning this huge film series. And the topics of those films are pretty much about self-transformation. And it's some topics that really haven't been talked about or screened here, so we're really excited about that. But as we started Evolver, our first focus was trying to you know, get people coming to the events and doing a lot of promotion. And now we're getting lots of people that are interested, and we're trying to think of a bigger idea or a bigger project that we can accomplish with all these people that have been coming in and showed interest. So that's kind of what we have in the works for now. So right now, just the film screening and trying to think of something bigger that we can do.
Cool. That is so cool to hear.
Hey, Maria, I just wanted to ask you, one of the things that we did here with our group in Asheville, with our sport group, is we did like a community garden where we actually went to a church. There were so many of us, we had a whole garden plowed and planted within like an hour and a half. So that may be an idea for you for some upcoming things, is to do some city stuff and really put Evolver on the map that way with doing some city projects, because that gets a lot of coverage with the press and things like that, and that'd be really cool to do. But also with that, have you guys done any sort of like dance parties or try that, where you got DJs and VJs and visual artists and did some sort of like DJ or art show or anything like that yet?
We haven't done that yet. We have contacts for all of those. The only thing is, I think that Indianapolis is a little bit less progressive in terms of hosting events that talk about psychedelics or ayahuasca monologues. So what we've seen so far, though, is like that's a possibility. We had the idea of partnering with a local art gallery on a First Friday art walk and maybe doing that. But something nice that we see that there is a huge need for is like alternative health. Like a raw food event that we had so many people. So we're thinking about having monthly community raw food potlucks, you know, bringing people together and kind of establishing like a community around that where people can share recipes and just kind of share it that way. But another idea that we had was creating like from our events some kind of like a little collective. Like we each have all these skills. I personally make kombucha tea. Margie, the other organizer, makes her own soaps. My friend Allie, who's going to be an organizer, she's a raw food chef. So if we organize, you know, we share some of our products or our skills, or maybe teach each other that way. I think that's something that is of interest to our group as well. So we're thinking about doing that in the future.
Yeah, there's, at least it's been my experience, there's no shortage of groups to partner with around, you know, holistic health and healing. Like, or also, we've partnered a lot with Transition Town, which speaks to, you know, sort of like a self-reliance and also a health movement. So a lot of opportunities to spend. I can't believe how quickly you've grown just since founding in, did you say December?
We started in November, yeah.
Whoa, wow.
It's awesome.
Congratulations.
Yeah, we've been spending a lot of time promoting and just contacting local alternative newspapers and just trying to like spread the word and gain interest. And it's been really interesting to see how many people come up to us at the events and say, thank you. Like, thank you for organizing this and bringing this community together. Like, they thought, you know, that it would never happen. And they, you know, they felt similarly to how we did at the beginning, you know, like something was missing and just kind of feeling sad about it. So it feels great. I feel like we're already having an impact on our community here by bringing together and establishing connections and people kind of going on with their own ideas. So that's been really fun to see.
Excellent. That's what's up. Doing a great job out there.
Yeah, great
Thanks.
To hear.
Yeah, I actually escaped from Indianapolis. The Super Bowl is happening there, and it's just complete chaos and madness. So I came out to Cleveland, Ohio, where I'm doing this interview at the moment, to partake in a sweat lodge.
Wow.
So. But yeah, thanks for your time and for interviewing me.
All right,
absolutely.
Yeah, cool. Thanks for sharing. Golf, great to hear. Thanks
yeah,
for
we'll
all
have
you're
we'll
doing.
Have you back on in a couple months. You can give us an update on how your film festival went and some other things that you guys did.
Definitely, sounds good.
Awesome.
Thanks. Yeah.
Thanks for coming on. And with that, we'll hear a little bit more of Scalar's music. And when we get back, joining us is the White Witch of LA.
Raja.
How's it going?
Great, how are you?
I'm good.
So you're on Skype rather than landline?
They said they were going to call me, but I just came on Skype to see if it would work. So, I don't
sound good.
Oh, good. Awesome.
Yeah. Chris is still on too?
Yeah,
that's so funny. I don't see them on here.
Me neither.
We should have a show where we have 33 people on Skype, where we have like 20 people. It's like a spore party. We just get like, you know, 20 different spores. That'd be a good show. You know,
Raja, just... thanks so much for your time on a Friday night.
Oh, no, I'm pretty much a grandma, so...
I can relate.
It's not a big sacrifice.
Awesome. Most people in the spiritual community are late night owls anyways. Yep. I'm Raja. And welcome back. You're listening to Evolver Planet Radio, and now joining us on the show from LA is the Maja Dao Yu, if I said it correctly.
Dao, sorry.
And her website is godismyboyfriend.com. She's joining us from LA, dubbed the White Witch of LA. And Maja, thank you for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Maja. Awesome.
Hi, how's it going?
Great. So can you tell us a little bit about what you practice and how you came to be the White Witch of LA?
Sure. I mean, that's kind of an epic question.
Like, yeah.
Oh, how did you come about on the planet Earth exactly?
Yeah.
I mean, it was a long kind of ardent journey, you know, that took a long time to develop. I mean, I've been studying esotericism and occultism forever, you know, pretty much from the time I was a kid. I was into crazy spiritual stuff, and I was surrounded by my mom, who had, like, traveled to Tibet and had all these crazy books. So, I mean, for me, it's been a long time developing. I didn't just, like, you know, go into Earth Cafe and decide I was, like, into this stuff. You know, but, and it developed over a long period of time. I mean, my practices incorporate a lot of different sort of pagan, occult, ancient, esoteric things that have all amalgamated over years of research and experiences.
Oh, wow. So what would you say, I mean, what do you currently practice? I know you have a lot of lectures available online, and you lecture here in L.A., and you also offer astrology readings. I mean, how are you active as the White Witch of LA, and how did you get that title?
Oh, sure. Well, the title, it's a funny story, actually. I was drinking with some friends in a bar, and I have a friend who is very dark hair and, you know, wears black pretty much all the time, and we had nicknamed her the Raven. And she was going to give me a ride home that night, and I, of course, wear a lot of white. And so we were running to her car, and this other friend of ours goes, "Look at the Raven running down the street with the White Witch." So it kind of stuck, and then everyone just started calling me that. I just took it as my name because it really kind of came out of loving friends, so I liked it a lot. But my practices as a white witch, I mean, they kind of incorporate a lot of things. First and foremost, I focus on healing. And that's really, I think, where the word white witch kind of differentiates from, say, like, you know, a black witch who maybe doesn't try so much to heal people, but is out a little bit for her own nefarious purposes. But I do herbal remedies. My readings all tend to focus on healing. I know a lot of people view astrology as like something fun you can look up in the back of Cosmopolitan magazine. But for me, my astrology readings get into nitty gritty. Like, people are always shocked at what I can see in their charts. I mean, things come up like childhood abuse, you know, mommy daddy stuff, issues in their relationships. It gets really into like finding and identifying psychological patterns and then trying to transform them and heal them. And that's true of my tarot readings and I Ching readings as well.
Right. Wow. So with that title, do you face any misconceptions about magic that you, you know, have to respond to, whether it's somebody coming to you for a reading and just asking you to, you know, just answer all their questions as if like in a Disney movie or...
Oh, yeah. All the time. I mean, I have patience because people just don't know, you know. They do. They see some movie and they think of a witch and, you know, they think of like Marilyn Manson and they think I can tell them their future. And so that's like, which I can like see future stuff. That's certainly an issue. But for me, I mean, people misconceive that all witches are Satanists. So that's like one of the first reactions that I get. People like are like, well, I don't know, like witchcraft is just evil. So I have to combat that a lot because I'm not a Satanist. And I mean, I like to think I'm not evil, but I don't know. Some of my exes might tell you different. But I will. I'll just sit patiently and kind of explain more what I do when I'm confronted with those, you know, Disney-esque kind of reactions.
Oh, funny. You know, one of the things I love, I know you co-host this show, Expanding Mind, with Eric Davis, and one of the things I just love about your and Eric Davis's banter is that you both have an understanding of this love and light kind of talk, and at the same time you both totally appreciate punk rock, heavy metal, you know both sides of the coin. So I've always wondered, like, how has your interest in the occult informed your musical and artistic taste, and then, you know, the other way around? I know that's another one of those big questions that I had to ask.
Yeah, I mean, that's very pertinent. You know, there's a fantastic book about ties between music and the occult. It was written by Gary Lachman, who he was like the original bassist for Blondie.
Right?
And he went on to write a bunch of esoteric occult books. His books are fantastic. And he wrote a book called Turn Off Your Mind. And it tracks like how bands picked up occult influences through specific books. And it's absolutely fantastic. So for me, I found that book to be so wonderful because I could really relate to it. I mean, for me, I was really into like the Conan novels, like the Robert E. Howard books, you know, and they would have those amazing Frank Frazetta paintings on the cover. So then I would go to the record store and I'd see the heavy metal music and it would have like the same paintings. And I was like, well, I have to check that out, you know. So there was definite crossover in all kinds of different ways. A lot of times the artwork, like if an album had occult artwork on there, I would be drawn to it because I was familiar with it through some of the books I was reading and things like that. Like, you know, it would just go back and forth all the time.
Yeah, that brings to mind, I forgot about the book by the Blondie bassist, but I feel like he's been on your show before. And also, it reminded me of Are You Serious? Counterculture
totally.
Through the Ages. So that's really interesting. It's another thing I wanted to ask you is if you can recommend any practices specific to people or groups who are, you know, making an effort in social change or, you know, looking to actively participate in this shift?
Man, that's a really pertinent question. And, you know, for me, one of my favorite examples of that in history, although there's lots, I'm kind of a big Dion Fortune fan. And Dion Fortune was a witch, and she was, you know, one of the founding members of the Golden Dawn there with S.L. MacGregor Mathers and the infamous beast himself, Aleister Crowley. And she had formulated a group called the Brotherhood of Light. And this was while the Nazi regime was going on. And she organized this group of esotericists and occultists specifically to come together socially and try and combat the Nazi forces, the Nazi powers. And they did it in a purely mental, meditative way. And the techniques that she would use was she would have everybody kind of concentrate mentally and send love and light, which I know you mentioned the love and light. I am a big love and lighter, you know, as much as I'll get down with heavy metal. love and light really is kind of the way we're going to get to anything. So she would really focus love and light to the Nazis, which, you know, who was focusing love and light to the Nazis at that time? Nobody. And who needed love more than anyone else on the planet Earth at that time? I would say the Nazis. So, I mean, a practice that everyone can do under any social situation, whether it's George Bush trying to help him out or, like, get any kind of thing going on, is to come together in groups and really kind of focus and think about what's going on and try and switch the energy. Try and think, well, what can we do to make this better? Instead of just kind of sitting around bitching about everything, you know, try to actually change your mind about it and focus on how am I going to flip this and make it go light? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's so interesting. I kind of a related question as do you have any tips for, like, how to be a good skeptic? And I don't mean, you know, skeptic as in dismissive, but I guess in a way to be sort of literate in learning to bridge the physical and spiritual realms.
That's a really important skill. And I like how you said be a good skeptic, because there are bad skeptics. I mean, they'll have an agenda just like the frou-frou people. You know, a bad skeptic will be the one that goes into it believing it to be false and then working to prove that. A good skeptic should go into a situation completely blank and observe what is really happening, you know? So to me, to be a good skeptic in all this, I think is very important. And you have to really just open your mind to anything possible happening. And then experiment to find out what happens. Like, you have to try it. Like, do it and see what goes down. I mean, that's really the best any of us can hope to achieve any kind of real experience, is to just kind of blank ourselves out and jump into it and find out what happens.
And Maja, I want to ask you, because it's funny that you brought up the White Brotherhood, because I've read quite a bit about that, and also about the White Dragon Society.
Oh,
and
awesome.
a lot of people, you know, don't know it, it's a big misconception that the all Masons and all these big elites are all bad, and that's totally not true. A lot of the information suppressed about the White Brotherhood and stuff like that. And I volunteer at a place called the Light Center here in Asheville. And part of what we do in volunteering is just holding that space and vibration. And part of my volunteer is to meditate a certain amount of times a day for a certain period of time and just hold that space. And we do things where we go to different countries around the world where they're badly hit with wars or anything. And the place has been doing it for years. I was just there about a year now. And they just hold space.
Wow.
They just hold light and love.
Yeah.
And they just stay in the hotel rooms if it's Lebanon or Iraq, and they just hold space there. And it's so powerful. And the more of us that get together, we start vibrating off each other. We become more powerful. And that's some of the information that they'll want out there, that there are these groups and there are these practices and meditative things that we can do to really make a impact and a difference just by a couple of us getting together. So it's really important that you brought that up. And I'm glad, because out of all the guests, very few bring up that there are these good groups of people that are trying to help us. And I also know you do a lot of lectures, and I saw on your site you have Maja's Magic School. How did that come about, where you started doing these, like, amazing workshops and stuff like that? Like, when did Maja's Magic School first begin, and how have you seen that grow?
Oh, it's just been one of my favorite things that I have done in my life, you know. It actually started... The first one, my first lecture was started because of Doug Dutton, who ran Dutton's Books, which was the biggest used bookstore in Los Angeles for years, until sadly it closed. All the bookstores are just dying everywhere. It's breaking my heart. But so that led to an alchemy lecture series at the Philosophical Research Society. And then it's kind of grown from there, and now I do it at the Annie Besant Lodge, which is an old 1920s building where Annie Besant and C.W. Leadbeater from the Theosophical Society would hang out, and Aldous Huxley would hang out there with his group of smarty pants. And it's just, the Magic School title came from one of the folks that has been attending, an amazing artist, my friend Owl Eyes, and he just started calling it Magic School and started calling me Teach.
Nice.
Like, welcome back, Cotter, or something. I don't know. And I think if you go on, actually, his blog is like Immortal Mortal, and his name's Owl Eyes. If people want to check out his work, it's so good. But that really just grew into this community of artists and musicians and, you know, chemists and scientists and doctors. We had the LA County Coroner coming for a little while, and just like this wow. unbelievable group of folks that were all interested in esoterica that would all come to just, you know, listen to different topics that I would bring up.
Awesome. And also, what's been the response in LA? Because I have a sister, she lives out in Beverly Hills, and it's a very 3D place from what I've experienced out there. And I know, being the White Witch, you said you've battled a lot of things. I'm sure people, just under the conception that all witches are bad, which is what is basically taught and imprinted to most of the society.
Yeah.
And if you go back, you know, just a couple hundred years, there was tens of thousands of witches that were burned at the stake. So yep. coming in out from L.A. and being dubbed that, like, how do you explain that to people, like listeners that don't understand what a white witch is, or someone from L.A.? Like, how do you get over that? Like, what do you actually say to people to explain really who you are and what you do, to explain yourself to people, like to our listeners or someone who doesn't know what a white witch is?
Well, I'm the perfect person to be able to do that, because I talk like nonstop. Like, it's really hard to get me to shut up. So my favorite thing, I did debate when I was in high school, and I was a huge debate team nerd. So one of my big passions is getting involved in these imbroglios with people over religion and philosophy. So to me, that's like part of my joy, to get into these conversations. And thankfully, nice. You know, I'm a nerd, so I read a lot. So I can have these conversations with, you know, maybe Christians, or maybe they're, you know, have specific religious views. I'm pretty savvy on most of the religions, so I can hold down the fort. And to nice. Me, I feel like when I explain it to them, to someone who doesn't know what a white witch is, I'll first ask, well, who are you? Like, what's your background? What do you believe in? And that makes it very easy, because white witches are in almost every culture. Every, you know, kind of country has their own version of the healer, you know, who is a witch. So I explain it by trying to put it into their context.
And by doing that, you either get into a big argument, or you shed some light and help awaken that person to the
truth. Yeah, that's right. It's usually one of the two.
I'm the same way, too, where if it's someone who's religious or something like that, I just basically fired back at them. And a lot of these common sense things that are in the world, if you just point these things out, just one little thing to these people, it could spark, and I've seen it, an entire 180 on their whole beliefs. And that's why most of the times, people don't even engage in conversation when I talk about certain things, because either they don't even want to think outside the box. Yeah, and I find that hard to deal with.
It's true. But I like to approach it by trying to connect with the person, as opposed to trying to alienate it. A lot of people approach religious differences as they have to confront, right? They have to say, like, oh, well, you're wrong and I'm right, or like, you don't know, you're ignorant. I think that's kind of not such a good way to go about it. How about, well, where is the point where we agree? Like, what do you believe? And I'll tell you where I fall into that, you know? But it's true, it gets frustrating when people have that affrontive reaction, and then they won't even listen to what you're saying. So, I mean, then
yeah.
Go ahead.
Sorry. I read an interview where you're talking about how you perform as the oracle, and how sometimes you're at these kind of events that are not traditionally, you know, events where you would do an oracle reading, like you were at some, not a Gigi Allen concert, but you know, you go do oracle readings in bars and places like that, and it's like the hecklers who are the most challenged to kind of ask themselves, well, what am I seeking? Because, you know, you just get up on stage and say, ask me any question.
It's really funny. You know, I always think it's funny when I go up and I totally open. I say, hey, man, let's talk about whatever. And then, you know, these people will have a really, like, violent reaction to it. Like, they'll heckle me in some kind of, like, assertive, usually sexually confrontational manner. And then when I address them, you know, like, in a very serious way and I answer their question, they suddenly are forced to, like, look at, oh, you know, this isn't, like, a joke. This is actually a real person who just opened their heart in front of me and is going to address me like I have my heart open. And then they kind of have, like, a little freak out.
Wow.
It's really amazing.
Wow.
Very cool.
Yeah, and doing it in the bar is my favorite because, you know, at my magic school, everybody knows what they're in for. You know, people show up and they're like, okay, I'm at magic school, hooray. But at the bars, people are there to, like, you know, drink and see music and, you know, maybe get laid. So I get up on the stage, you know, I'm kind of tall and have crazy hair and I look like some kind of fairy or something. And then I start talking and they're like, what is this? Like, they have a brief existential crisis, you know, because they can't put it into any kind of context. And then they're confronted with questioning their reality. So it's really fun.
Okay, that's one more little side question. Is there, you're known for your long, kind of like platinum white hair. Is there any, like, ritual or witchy significance to your hair?
So funny.
Sorry, I had to ask.
I have evidence that my hair has power, actually, because my friend got that Aura app for their iPhone, and, and we took a picture of my hair, and it was like, nowhere else on the photo was there an aura except where my hair was, which was a streak of just bright red. It was really funny. But I've had my hair this long since I was about 15 years old, so it's been with me for a while, as you can imagine. I mean, long hair, it takes a while to grow, but my mother's hair is this long as well. Hers grows very long, but hers is black, like jet black. And the witchy significance, it's funny, because I was actually just reading this article a friend of mine sent me. Did you read that about the Native Americans in the war?
That's part of what made me ask.
So I like to think maybe it makes me more sensitive having the long hair, you know, because it blows in the wind like my antenna or something.
Yeah.
And Maj, I also want to ask you, since you are the Oracle and you can see futures, what do you see with Evolver Planet Radio and the Evolver Spores and what's going on with this next year? How do you see this Evolver group and what we're doing impacting the world?
Oh, that's so good. Well, I mean, I have, like, kind of followed Evolver, and I love the idea of, like, the switcheroo between doing things on blogging and then taking that to actual events, you know, where you can come together and actually do stuff like practices and workshops and things like that. And what I see, I'll tell you what I see with the Evolver group. You guys, I don't know anything about it, but have you guys faced, like, conflict within it with some people, like, trying to... Have you had any, like, power struggles within it?
Yeah, certainly in its founding. Yeah, I mean, this is the second incarnation of Evolver. As a network, though, you know, it's a network of 50 cities, right about. Right. We all come together on this, you know, like in a Google forum to decide on the themes of these monthly events called Spores. So, I mean, there is local autonomy, and there's also, you know, in New York, there's the founders who also founded Reality Sandwich. So I'm sure there's some throughout. I mean, it's one huge experiment in collaboration.
Right. I mean, to me, it feels like a really good, positive thing. I do, just when thinking about it, get that little twinge. Like, there's going to be some people that try and, like... I mean, I guess that's true of anything. If you look at it as a microcosm of, you know, any societal effort, that there's always some jerk that comes in and wants to take it over. but overall... I mean, it looks really good. It looks like grassroots, you know, being able to... I mean, that's kind of what the United States wanted to be, right? To have all the states have their own, like, little groups and then communities and counties and then have this overall governing force. So you guys are kind of following along that model, and hopefully we'll be able to do it in a way that some jerks don't get in the middle of it and mess it up.
There you go. Awesome.
Darn those jerks.
Well, we're going for the, you know, group action that we were talking about in the beginning that, you know, makes us actively participate. We'll see how the power struggles play out. Hope for light and love.
Yeah, that's all we can do, really.
Couldn't say it better myself. Well, Maja, awesome. Thank you so much for coming on the show, and hopefully later on this year we can have you back and see how your workshops and everything are going.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks so much for having me, you guys.
Good to hear from you, Maja.
All right. Have a great weekend. And just to give you your website again is godismyboyfriend.com.
Thanks, guys.
Awesome. Have a good night. And with that, we'll quickly go over our upcoming guests, and starting with February 10th, who do we got?
So next Friday, February 10th, we're going to hear from musical artist The Flying Mystics, and we're also going to hear from Thomas McGregor, founder of Interconnect Interactive.
Awesome. And the week after that, we're going to hear from music artist Cyber Pixie, world's leading female VJ. She is an awesome guest, a truly enlightened being, so that's going to be a great interview. Also on that show, we're going to have Mitch Schultz from Austin, Texas, giving us a Sport City update. And with the interview on that show is going to be with Baker from BakerTheBrand.com, and he's going to talk about his new book, How to Be Awesome Baker Style.
And the following Friday, February 24th, we'll have a Spore City update from Brian Duffy in Boston, Massachusetts. And we'll also have an interview with Mandy Kahn, co-author of Collage Culture, Examining the 21st Century's Identity. Check out collageculture.com to find out more about the book.
Cool. And the week after that, March 2nd, we have a interview with Kristen Ann. And the week after that, we're going to get a Spore City update from Columbia, and we're going to have some more guests for those 2 weeks as well, but that's what we got for right now.
Also, check out EvolverPlanetRadio.com and Evolver.net and RealitySandwich.com for all the latest.
And just for the new listeners out there, Evolver.net, who we are, Evolver is a new social network for conscious collaboration. It provides a platform for individuals, communities, and organizations to discover and share the new tools, initiatives, and ideas that will improve our lives and change the world. And with that, Evolver Planet Radio and World, we wish you a good night and good weekend.
Good night, Evolver listeners.
Enjoy some more DJ Scalar. This land.